Welcome back to Silver Screen Social, listeners. I'm your host, Jackson Vickery, and on this episode, I spoke to composer Blake Neely about his work on Masters of the Air. Neely has been nominated 7 times for an Emmy Award, where he won in 2021 for his main title theme for the series The Flight Attendant. Please enjoy the trailer of The Masters of the Air before the episode begins.
So you're right, mate?
My girl worth riding to is hard to find.
Not if you know where to look.
I'll miss you every second.
Major Egan, you were the first pilot assigned to the 100th.
Me and Buck Levin.
You are in charge of 35 planes and 350 air crewmen.
Don't you die on me before I get over there.
Something big is brewing.
The 8th will be sending up the largest air armada ever assembled in the history of mankind.
Straight into Hitler's territory.
Winning complete and total air superiority. That's the mission.
What?
You might be the last pretty face I ever see.
The move. We lead our boys through it. All that we do. Day in, day out. The sun to a guy, doesn't it?
You're here to fight the monsters. The things these people are capable of. They got it coming. Trust me.
Lord, guard and guide the men who fly through the great spaces of the sky.
Are we Tuskegee men or what?
Sir, yes, sir!
Be with them traversing the air in darkening storms or sunshine fair.
I think we may be done.
We are going to sit here and take it.
We're going to stick with our mission as long as we can fly.
We won't go without a fight.
It's very nice to meet you, Blake.
How are you, Jackson?
I'm doing very well. I'm happy that the spring is starting to actually start to flourish and just starting to get out of the winter months and just starting.
Where are you? Are you in New York?
No, I'm in Dallas. So I'm in the middle of the country. So we just.
Oh, good. I'm from Paris, which is.
Oh, no way. Yeah. No way. That's amazing. Wow.
I know Dallas very well.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
it was our big city. Like, you know, we had no malls. We had nothing. So we'd have to go to Dallas. It was our airport. Yeah. It was everything.
Yeah. No, I love it here. It's a strange state, but.
What part are you in?
I'm in Lakewood. So near White Rock Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a nice little area to reside.
Did you grow up in Texas?
I did. The only time I really ever left was to go to school at the University of Kansas, and then I went to study abroad in Leicester, England. So
and you lost your accent.
I've lost my accent. I don't know if I ever
worked on. I actually worked on for a year losing mine when I first moved to California. I got dictation tapes and would listen to them and practice with them for a year. So I heard like a voicemail of myself and went, "Oh, I'm not talking like that anymore."
Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes the Texas twang pops out. Yeah. Other times it doesn't.
If I'm around my father, it's right back.
Yeah.
So we're doing this interview for Silver Screen?
Yes, Silver Screen Social. It's a podcast that focuses mainly on the crafts folks that make the film and television series that that I find fascinating. And I hope that
audiences find fascinating. But I think with Masters of Air proving that it is quite popular with both the critics and with audiences alike, I just first have to say congratulations on the success of this one.
Thank you. I mean, we're all so thrilled. I remember talks along the way of like, who's this demographic, do you think, for this? And then it turns out it's like everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's incredible.
How powerful the series is as a whole, and the acting and the writing, and it just sucks you in.
Yeah. And I mean, and I would be remiss not to mention the score that sucks you in very, very quickly. With the opening theme. It's just absolutely gorgeous and cinematic, and not something you see every day on a television show. So,
well, you don't get 2.5 minute opening credits anymore. I mean, the longest one I'd done in, well, I did the Pacific.
Hmm.
It's 3 minutes, and other than that, it's like, I mean, we don't even get them anymore. It's like a card, you know, like a 5 second card.
Hmm.
But I grew up in the age of big TV theme songs, and I love them. So when the producers said, yeah, we want this big opening sequence, it's like, sign me up.
Excellent. Yeah. But speaking of just something I was coming across this morning, and I thought would be an interesting sort of first question to ask you. While I was prepping for the interview, I always go to the composer's, what they like to call essentials, so the Blake Neely essentials. And I'm curious, what is an essential piece or an essential score outside of Masters of the Air that you're particularly proud of, and one that you would like to see sort of on the top of people's listening on the top of people's playlists whenever they come across your work?
Interesting. It's a tough question to answer, because they're like, I always say they're like babies. They're like children of yours. So it's like, who's your favorite child? But I do have ones I've always been very proud of. In the same vein of Masters of the Air is a movie that we did with Playtone called Greyhound.
Mm, yes.
And that was a really tough score to figure out, and figuring it out and what we got out of it and the orchestra performance. So I love that. And I also love, I like to point out, I had a great time working on the series The Flash.
Oh, yeah.
I did all of the superhero shows for him, a lot of them. But that one was the one that was really... just found a new gear of doing a hybrid. It's called hybrid scoring with electronics and orchestra, and those are two. And of course, the Pacific. I still love the Pacific, but it's crazy how long ago that was. You know, we went between the Pacific and Masters was 14 years.
Holy smokes! Really?
Wow. Yeah. Yes. Wow. What it was interesting for me in that regard is that I'd forgotten what I wrote for the Pacific, so it wasn't like I was going to tread the same ground. I mean, of course, I'm going to sound like me, but I wasn't trying to tie it to that. So it was nice to have that break. You know, mm-hmm. A lot of times on television series, you have maybe 2 months off and then it's right back into the next. And it's like, oh, I'm probably going to sound the same. So that was nice. And then I have early work. My very first TV show is still... I would love for people to find, which was Everwood. And that was kind of what started it all for me.
Love it. Love it. And I will have to check that out after we hop off this call. But I do want to talk about the scope of this project and having it sort of be this, I mean, truly just cinematic moment. And I'm curious what the scope looked like for you in terms of the approach, and how it was similar from the Pacific to now, and how things have changed in regards to the scope of these projects.
Very early on, I was specifically thought and talked with the producers that I really wanted to use only orchestra, no electronics, none of the modern type of things. What I wanted to do is try to take the traditional, almost period approach, but make it sound modern. So with a modern way of writing and how we mic'd the orchestra and how we mixed it. And it just, to put myself in that creative box, you know, because with a lot of scoring, it's like, oh, I've got this synth and I've got, you know, these electronics or electric guitars, whatever. And to not do that was creatively challenging a bit and pushed me. And I love to be in a box and put myself rules about it. So it, you just find new creative ways of doing things. But the approach, I guess, differently from Band of Brothers, which I got to work on, my mentor was Michael Kamen, and I actually started with him, and I did some orchestrations on Band of Brothers. So I really stayed connected through the entire triplet of series. I think each approach was a bit different, and Pacific, we definitely tried something different than Band of Brothers. One of the things in Band of Brothers was none of the action, none of the war was scored. And in Pacific, we went there. We scored a lot. And it just felt really heavy. And this, to me, I kind of, you know, you watch these masters, they're sort of the superheroes of the war. You know, they're flying these, I mean, they're the way they would fly and maneuver and just flak alone. Imagine coming into this newly invented thing that's going to take you out of the sky. And so I wanted not to be happier, but to have a lot more movement and a lot more sort of excitement to the score. Then of course we have our heavy, heavy emotional times and scenes and thinking of home and when they discover the concentration camp. But the rest, I just want this constant tension and excitement.
No, I mean, you definitely feel that. I felt when watching the series, I mean, there were moments where I'd look up and it was like 20 minutes had passed because, I mean, you just have that sort of anxiety that's just looming over you during some of these fight sequences that, I mean, it's just such a testament to, I mean, all of the crafts going on and all of the acting going on. It's just...
Yeah, there were long, long sequences that just fly by. I mean, the dropping the bomb on the ball bearings plant, like that is a long sequence. And it just, like you said, you forget that, oh my God, I've been watching this for 15 minutes. The Tuskegee Airmen, when they have to fly all that distance and they're like, you're probably not going to make it. And it's exciting. It's horrifying, but it's exciting and it's tense. And that's my favorite things from Masters of the Air is how they would, the filmmakers would let you just sit in it. And that, not fast cutting and not just let you sit in it. And you really felt the tension that those guys were feeling, those kids.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the other, I mean, just frightening thing to think about and just thinking, I mean, just as a almost 29 year old myself, just being in that situation, I do not.
You would have been an old man in the war.
I know. And I'm just like, I can barely drive a car, to be honest. I'm a terrible driver. So I don't even know how I could, navigate a plane with everything that was going on. That the whole thing just baffles me.
The other approach, we had long discussions about how when you get up in those air sequences, it's really tough to navigate the terrain and like make sense because everyone looks the same. They've got these masks on, right? So all the actors start kind of blending. You're like, who's who? And Gary Getzman would a lot of times say, you know, I need music to really help us navigate. So whether it's a certain theme is on this guy, so when you get off of him, you go to a different theme, or just a sound or no music, the score had to kind of help you get your bearings up there. So that was interesting.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about the themes. And I'm curious for, I mean, I have a list of names, but just due to the sake of time, I'm curious if there's any particular character's theme that jumped out to you in sort of watching their story arc play out and through the score.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been asked whose theme is what, but I didn't give any characters' themes. It was more situational themes. But the closest I came was there's the big last cue is the most extensive version of this theme called This Is It. And that was really Buck and Bucky's theme because they were really, I mean, it's about all of them, but they were really who you were watching and watching that bond. And, you know, the fact that he was his best man at his wedding. And I mean, it's, you know, so it's the closest I came to having like a character theme, but it really became more about, I would call it like the brotherhood theme.
Love that.
And that was interesting after years of superhero scoring where everybody's got a theme, you know, Flash comes in, Arrow comes in, they all have themes, Supergirl. And this was, I just want to score more like what they're feeling. There's the going home theme. There's the, we can do this theme. There's the get ready for battle theme. So that was the approach.
And I'm curious if there were any sort of, I mean, you've spoken how very traditional, very orchestral, but I'm curious if there's were any unusual elements that you added into the score to just add different flair or a different sound per se.
Yeah, I did an entire orchestral session of just weird, scary, odd sounds. Where it was, okay, we're going to bend this note for 3 minutes. We're going to do little swoop bys and striking hits. Just stuff like that that I could use over this traditional score to modernize it. But also, I didn't want to score the horror, but there are very unsettling elements. So while I wasn't trying to do any kind of horror techniques, it was just unsettling. Like, what is that in the back? There's like this really nice melody, but there's something in the background that is just, what is that? And it's, that was to just kind of a reminder that even in these beautiful moments, it's war. You know, then there's a moment where they say, where Buck says, they're looking out at the bombs exploding. He goes, it's kind of beautiful. And it is. I mean, some of those, like, they're watching fireworks, but that's a war happening. So that was sort of my idea.
Yeah, no, I mean, deeply unsettling, but my final question to you is, I'm such a fan of, I mean, I put compositions on in the car and I just, to either start my day or to get a certain feeling. And I'm curious if there's any particular score or composition that you've listened to lately that you just absolutely loved or can't get out of your head.
Well, the reason I'm in this is because when I was 8 years old, I saw Star Wars in the theater and I thought that must be a job because I've never heard this music before. So I will always enjoy anytime Star Wars comes on. But then I have Desert Island pieces like Arvo Pärt is one of my favorite composers, an Estonian composer. And I'm even going to hear one of his works performed this weekend at the LA Phil. So I do have things that I turn to, and I just still think music for movies is magic. You can literally change the way someone feels watching a scene by a piece of music. So one of the longest discussions we'll ever have with my collaborators is what's the tone for this scene? Because if you nail it, you nail it. And if you don't, you're not going to get the subtext that they're looking for. But I'm the same way. Depending on my mood, I'll put something on the car and it'll either change it or enhance it.
Yeah, no, it really is crazy just how.
And it's just 8 notes. It's just 8 to 12 notes being manipulated. So it's magic.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's extra magic to me because I cannot play a instrument to save my life. I tried piano and it was quite a disaster. So I'm just very thankful for the very talented individuals like yourself for being able to bring these works of art to life.
Oh, thank you for appreciating it.
Of course. And I know we're right at time.
Well, thanks for having me. It's fun to see fellow Texan.
Yes, fellow Texans forever.